Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Today's episode is brought to you by Hyundai and the 2022 Tucson and Santa Fe plug-in hybrid EVs. Learn more about the widest range of electrified vehicles at HyundaiUSA.com. That's HyundaiUSA.com. Well, in the first half, we have more shitty car, first shitty car submissions. I'll tell you some more shitty car stories. News as well. First, there's Geico. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, Geico can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance. They are all covered with Geico. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use Geico mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to Geico. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
This is about something that lights your fire when nothing else will.
This is the Mark Divine Show. This show, we're going to discover and dive in and discuss what makes the world's most inspirational, compassionate, and resilient leaders so courageous.
Transform the nature and functioning of our own brain for the better.
Go put your virtues in action. Be the best version of yourself.
Life is a practice. Day by day, get wiser and stronger and grow.
How do you understand enough about your own mind and psychology and emotions, and how do you develop a reflective awareness practice to actually get in the driver's seat of your own mind?
We go in-depth with people from all walks of life, martial arts grandmasters, meditative monks, CEOs, military leaders, stoic philosophers, proud survivors, and more. Every episode turns our guest experience into actionable insights that you can learn from to lead a life filled with compassion and courage.
I started putting all these little tools in my pocket, started to reflect a lot and meditate.
There has to be a balance between movement and rest.
It all starts with us. We cultivate these qualities in ourselves. We become a beacon of light for others in the world. Please join us on the journey. The Mark Divine Show. Hoo-yah.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, from Meme Gods, Tank Sinatra, from What We're Drinking with Dan Dunn, and from Baby Blues Barbecue, Rick McCarthy, with Gina Grad on news and Bald Brian on sound effects, and now, and the rest, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on, cut, get it on, the church, get the mandate, you get it on. Thanks for tuning in, thanks for sharing, we love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
Saw the ratings went up last week, so thank you for that, and Bald Brian.
I just collect the motherfucking checks and do my job.
Well, we got a lot to get into today. Brian has been getting lots of tweets about people in their first cars. I
specifically asked, tell me your, like, the first car, that first piece of shit that your family, like, bequeathed upon you, right? Like, that piece of shit that was just not going, it was going to the junkyard. It wasn't being used. It had been around for 10 years. What was that first piece of shit? Not the car you bought with your saved money, that precious, you know, fixer-upper, the one that you're like, you'd rather forget.
Yeah, I forgot.
Got some good, fun responses.
I forgot that Ray's car was his mom's honeybee, a Datsun 210 or 310. It was called the Honeybee.
What's like a honeybee?
It's the cheapest, shittiest Datsun that's ever been produced.
I'm glad you brought that up because they're running.
You got a little echo.
I'm loving your concert version.
Yeah, I'm finding it. It's patched in here somewhere. We'll figure it out.
I'm gonna keep rolling with this. A running theme, which we'll look at. We'll enjoy a little cruise down memory lane. Car models I did not know ever existed.
Well, that's...
And you probably did, but you're like, there's a fuck, this exists? This
what do you mean, car models?
Well, you'll see.
Okay.
Well, it's like the Corona. You didn't know about the Corona wagon that you started off with. You didn't know about the honeybee.
I thought you meant, do you come with the car? Oh, you! Those car models.
I know. When you went, what do you mean, car models?
You've never heard of a car model?
Yeah.
The honeybee looks like a honeycomb. Like it's that horrible yellow beige.
It's as cheap a four banger as ever came out of Japan.
Wow.
And that was his first car. Ray used to like to do this move where we'd be driving down a major street, Ventura Boulevard or Laurel Canyon or something like that. And as we were coming to a red light, he'd go like, hold on, we're going for it. And he's like, we're literally just plowing through this red light. Wow. Like, yes, we are.
Wow.
Yeah. And my buddy Chris, not the Chris that I grew up with, but another Chris, had a Corona wagon as well.
Oh.
And we used to go to like morning, a 7-on-7 football practice or whatever. And the brakes failed on the wagon and we blew right through a stop sign and we did T-bone somebody.
A real piece of shit. I can speak from experience, that Toyota Corona. However, the station wagon, nice for packing in the dudes when, got to go to a party or whatever.
Well, way back in the day, me and Donnie bought a 64 limo, man, like Elvis's and Richard Nixon's limo. Yeah. Not their limo, but the kind of limo they would have been shepherded around with. This is in 1985, but we got that bad boy, and we would fill that thing up with human beings. Yeah. And we go to Palm Springs, or we would go to Santa Barbara, but it would always break down. But
it has a real hearse-like quality.
Yeah, we're showing a picture of it.
Look at those studs.
It's funny, in the foreground, you can see the back of my first truck, Mazda pickup truck, with a 6-foot extension for rolling on paint and a guide. For cutting a saw guide for cutting a clamp and a straight edge. And if you look at me in this picture leaning up against this car, I'm wearing the pants that I paint in. Those should be covered with paint.
That's not camouflage.
It's not stonewashed.
I had my painter's jeans on. But we would take that. We would famously borrowed my sister's 68 Dodge Dart to go to Mexico and blew it up and left it
there.
Before we got to Mexico, then Snake took his stepmom's Mazda, whatever. Look, all you people with your Mazdas and your Toyotas and your Nissans, it's all great now. Not in the 70s, it wasn't.
No.
Those were the littlest, shittiest cars on the planet. Then, of course, when we took that one to Mexico, the tire blew up and we had to sleep by the side of the freeway. So many... I don't know. Maybe people are depriving themselves of an impromptu adventure.
Yeah,
with the reliable transportation.
I think between your stories and the picture we're looking at, which one of you is Pony Boy? Which one of you is Soda Pop? Mm-hmm. Because this is very outsiders.
It's a real outsiders vibe.
Yes, it was. Took a picture in North Hollywood in front of a rental house that Ray was staying in.
You're not the Sochas.
And,
no, they're up in Hebrew Heights.
That was us.
And is that Ray?
Ray's in his underpants.
That's what I thought.
Someone got a camera out, so why wouldn't he get into his underpants?
Right.
So, Brian, you went and you've been talking to people on the internet, on Twitter. People have been tweeting you their first cars.
A couple of people tweeted me. I woke up to tweets this morning. People who heard today's show that aired today. We discussed crappy cars that we started off with, the cars we were bequeathed with from our family.
By the way, in contrast, I had a conversation with my daughter last night who's turning 16, as well as my son, and she announced that she wants a Mercedes convertible. And I said, I don't know about convertible, And she said, if we don't go convertible, I don't know if I'm interested in the car.
Oh, digging her heels in.
I would have loved to make that proclamation in front of my dad when I was 15 3/4.
Wow.
So how is that going to work out? Because we spent a lot of time on the show talking about, you work for half, I'll fork over the other half. Can she work for a Mercedes convertible?
I have no idea. I just said I'll talk to her about it later. But
I need some help negotiating a contract. Is she available?
That's a lot of lawns to mow.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sure it is. So that's a sharp contrast versus what we were doing. And yes, we'll never live in the era again where the family leaves the 16-year-old kid or bequeaths the 16-year-old kid a pile of shit because everything is sort of good now. I mean, you know, today's version of that is you're going to get a 2009 Camry with a V6 and a leather interior, which would have been the most car in the universe for us.
Yeah, plug in your device and you're good to go. Yeah. Everything's acceptable quality. What is not acceptable quality is this morning I woke up to a few tweets, like I said, people who listened to the show that aired today, like, dude, look at this car that I had. 19, you know, a lot of Pinto wagons, things of that nature, Eldorado, old ones that are beat down.
Friend of the show and collaborator Kevin Hench may hoist a trophy in the shit car department. And I think he was bequeathed this. His mom had a diesel Chevette. That's a Chevy Chevette diesel, which I didn't even know they made.
I didn't know
which
that
is
either.
0 to 60 and, you know,
2 days.
As long as it would take to take the steamership to Europe is basically what the 0 to 60 in that time. They didn't have diesels worked out back then. They just belch smoke, plumes, and nothing worked.
What was the upside to diesel? Why was that even?
Well, diesel used to be cheaper than conventional gasoline. It's now the most expensive, but it was cheaper. And you were supposed to get better gas mileage, and it was cheaper fuel.
And
a little less wear and tear. The engines ran longer or something like that. But
that's no longer the case, yes? Like, our gas is just fine.
Well, here's how diesel worked out. Does anyone know anyone with a diesel automobile?
No. I know somebody who drives an 18-wheeler.
I'm so excited for this. I had the diesel VW.
Of course.
Remember a couple of leases ago?
The recall one?
Yeah, it was one of the recalls.
The Jetta?
I had a Passat. You always round down, you motherfucker.
Yeah, sorry. Well, I remember the Jetta's being the big recall one, but maybe it was
the Passat.
Passat. Yeah. All right. Well, they worked it out, but they've still phased it out. There is no more diesel. All right,
electric,
Brian,
is kind
sorry.
Of, yeah, surged ahead. So I was so delighted by all
make
these
us feel better about our lives.
Junk that I was like, send me your pieces of shit. Tell me what you drove first, what you were given, bequeathed, etc. And a theme emerged. Number one, a lot of Toyotas. Toyotas were big amongst our listening audience. A lot of Corollas, a lot of Coronas. There's the part where Ben would put the picture up.
He's getting there.
It's a bit. I sprung it on him. Yeah, these are pictures that people send in, obviously, of their cars. These are just tin boxes.
I get the thing, you know, your parents bought the car and now they're going to hand it off to you. Fine. And they couldn't afford a lot for a car, so they got a four banger. And they needed good gas mileage and they needed to be durable, so they went with the Japanese make. Why did you get the shitty color?
Yeah.
That's on you, isn't it? Like, why did everyone's parent pick an embarrassing shit color to get?
You earth tone.
I'd call this color sad buttercream.
Yeah, whatever you want to say about
baby poop.
The shit boxes, you could have got one in red or silver.
Yeah, blue is fine.
White, no, they didn't do it.
A sad submission from one of our listeners. He had an Oldsmobile, an 89 1989 Oldsmobile 98, and I looked at this car and I'm like, that was our family's nice car when I was given this piece of shit. Like, he's like, this piece of crap was given to me. Like, this was our pride and joy.
Yeah, that could have been fancy at one point.
My dad was thrilled to get that car.
My best friend, I spent all my time in her car. She was bequeathed a 1984 Chrysler, which looked like that, except it was white-ish on the outside and dark brown burgundy velvet or velour on the inside.
Did it have the soft top?
What's that? Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. And then it starts.
It wasn't retractable. No, it was just cushioned.
Yes, exactly. Well, and speaking of that, we all got the pillowing roof that we don't have to deal with anymore.
The headliner that was collapsing.
Yes.
Yeah, that was my sister's Dodge Dart that I drove 7/8 of the way to Tijuana. You had to have one hand up holding the headliner because you couldn't see through the windshield. Also, thinking about this, in order to really feel the full effects of the pain of the pile of shits that we all grew up with, and I don't know if you guys had this, but in order to really finish it. It was it's the paprika on top of the deviled egg.
Okay.
It's not totally necessary, but it's
sing.
Good.
Yeah.
Makes it sing. You had to have the one friend who had a good car.
Fuck yes.
Just to fucking make your lot in life seem that much more miserable.
Yeah.
I had My one black friend was Tom Dent. Tom
the hand
Dent
surgeon
had,
kid?
Dad was a hand surgeon, and he had an RX-7, and it was cool.
Fuck yeah.
The newest RX-7, and then at some point started driving his sister's TR-8 Triumph around, another la cool la. Little sexy two-seater.
I had one rich friend in high school, Jim DeMartini, and while we were all driving, one friend had a Skylark. I had the Corona. There was a Pontiac something in there. He in 1995, he had a 1995 Mustang, the re-release.
Wow.
That is so funny. I was just going to say the only person I knew with a good car was a Mustang.
Yeah, James Baby Doll Dixon, I think, was that guy because he had the 280 ZX Nice Datsun Z car with the T-tops.
Yeah.
Like the 1981 cool with the T-tops.
Now,
yeah.
Speaking of themes, the theme that emerged, and this is the slideshow I put together. Now, Car Guy Carollo, I need you to be as honest as you can. When these cars come up, these are all models I have never heard of. I did not know they existed. And I need you to own up if there's one here, one or two or more, you're like, that's new to me. This is your era, so you probably were least aware of these. I've never heard of any of these.
Okay.
I will be transparent.
All right, let's start with the first one, the 1989, whatever we go first. Dodge Omni.
Yeah.
Omni. You know a Dodge Omni?
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
Dodge.
These are all listeners' first piece of shit cars.
Some of the biggest pieces of shit ever were America and Dodge, probably especially at all the American car brands, was way behind the curve. So they were building all these big land yachts, you know, and the Chrysler Cordoba and stuff. They were still building their big, fat land yachts while Japan, you know, VW released a bug.
Right.
You know, the VW bug has it's cute. It's got a cute name.
Super
people have some memories. They converted them into dune buggies and stuff like that. But let's not forget that was a little pile of shit that my parents always had VW bugs. VW got on board with the bugs. Then Honda started releasing stuff. Datsun started releasing stuff. Toyota started dealing stuff. So you have Honda, you have Nissan, you have Toyota, and they're all making their way into the American market. And this is in the early-ish, mid-ish 70s. The thought with Detroit is stay the course. No one wants these little piles of shit. But then, of course, the American OPEC gas embargo and all that kind of stuff. And so at some point in the early 80s and even mid 80s, the American car companies like Dodge, they were scrambling. They were like, oh, we got to make a small car too. But now they were way behind. Japan had sort of mastered the small car. Our offerings were like the Pinto and the Chevette. I told you two of my friends from high school, Robert and Lenny, both died in a Pinto wagon that burst into flames when they're driving to CSUN, a million years ago. So the American, and then Dodge was probably last. So Dodge, by the time they were coming out with their K cars, Lee Iacocca had taken over Dodge. He's like, I'm announcing the K. So all of a sudden, the Americans and Dodge, they got really pragmatic, but they tried to go from land yachts to whatever.
Like a compact.
Whatever Datsun was doing in 14 months. And of course, the product was shit. Yeah, and that's what got you the Dodge Omni.
So goddamn ugly.
Yes.
That was from listener, user Garden Donkey. Joliet Joel has an 89 Mercury Topaz.
Oh, yeah.
I've heard of this. I've definitely heard of this.
Oh, really? I don't know what the fuck this is.
It's awesome. It's so fucking ugly. That now, at least, you know, those land yachts, you know, you think about like greasers and you think of like Peggy Sue Got Married. Those are big, beautiful cars with the fins and they're gorgeous. And look what happened 20 years later.
I know. They got stripped of every good thing.
Every piece of charm.
And I always think about there was a union, an unholy union, between Renault, France, like the worst car company in Europe, and then AMC, and they came together with the Renault-AMC Alliance, which is a thing. But it's like, you want me to buy... So basically what you're saying is Danny DeVito and Rhea Perlman are going to have a child. She's just turned 18, and you want me to date her. Now, I haven't seen her yet, but I'm looking at the two entities that made her.
Not statuesque?
I could be, but I'm guessing when you take the now defunct AMC, who made like the Gremlin and the Matador and the Pacer, and you get them together with the people that invented the Le Car, and you put those... those two together?
That sounds like an SNL bit, Le Car.
My stepdad reminded me the other day when we were talking about my mom's old VW Squareback, the old Volkswagen station wagon, which is kind of what they did with the Corona and the Corona wagon. He said, that car was so funky. I said, yeah. He said, the windshield wiper spray, the fluid you train around, what they use to propel the spray on the windshield wiper, because you need a pump, motor, something. They use the air in the spare tire, which was in front.
Interesting.
What?
That's a deal with the devil.
I don't know. What if you
can look that up, Chris. I'm very fascinated. I didn't want to call him a liar. He worked on the car, but I said, that sounds like the shittiest design ever. Sorry.
Moving back in time, user D-Field 3 had a 1985 Nissan Stanza.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kansas got their share of the cars. I mean, these are all very familiar.
I don't know
to
what a Stanza is.
I remember the Stanza.
This is the sort of early beginnings of the SUV shitboxes from Nissan's early offerings. I had a roommate who had a Geo Metro.
Yep. Oh, fuck yeah. Of course.
Those are big.
Teeny, tiny little Flintstone cars.
When four cylinders is too much car for you, might I recommend the three-cylinder Geo Metro.
Economical.
And then it came out in a four-door, too.
Yeah.
And I said, obviously the pinnacle is you want to be driving a convertible Ferrari Daytona from 1971 that's got 12 cylinders and two doors. This car has four doors and three cylinders. That is a fucked up door to cylinder ratio. Sorry, Brian.
Danny the Jew had a 1983, be still, Gina, Subaru GL.
Just never heard
GL,
of it.
Just ran, just kind of, would you even know what kind of car that was?
That doesn't look like any Subaru I'm interested in.
The most generic looking car I've ever seen.
It's the same length at the front as in the back.
It looks like generic Matchbox car.
Yes.
And
looks like a little
It's amazing
wheel.
That everyone made it out of their youth driving these death mobiles around.
Yeah.
I mean, no airbags, no crumple zones, no nothing.
But was the car itself made out of hardier material, you know what I mean?
No, they were just more dangerous. They're just a ton more dangerous than cars are today. That was early on, that was Volvo's claim to fame. Like, we are into safety.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I would always talk to my mom and my stepdad about. They'd always go, we're driving a Volvo station wagon because Volvo's safe. And I'm like, true. But that car's 17 years old.
Yeah.
So
safety standards.
It was the safest car from 1973, but this is 1991, and the newer cars have come a long way. So you should buy a newer car to be safer versus an old. Whatever. I ride. This is the fastest donkey of its day. Like, okay.
Okay, we have trains.
have you heard of a skateboard?
Yeah. That's right.
Danny Conway drove a 1980 Chevy Citation.
Oh, yeah.
That's a terrible name for a car.
That's a terrible name.
Yeah,
although
it is.
Of all the cars I was tweeted, this one might be the best. Best looking.
Yeah. Yeah. It has a bit of a European vibe.
The Chevy Citation, although you can't see it by looking at it because it's a four-door, I think it had a hatchback in the back.
It had everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Chris and Ben, new employee Ben, had good first cars.
Yeah, Ben had a Civic, and he said that there were a bunch of cigarette holes in the passenger seat.
As there should be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which tormenting I thought,
children.
Like
yeah.
And then I had a 1990 Nissan Sentra that in order to start it, I had to remove the battery terminals every time and put them back on.
The fuck?
Every single time I had to start it.
It was not a good getaway.
It must have been an automatic, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Oh, you know why? I didn't even know why. I just knew that that's how
I didn't even
to
know
make my car go.
Because I had a Nissan the hood. Sentra in 90s, but I don't even know what the fuck you're talking about.
I had to pop the hood, disconnect the battery, and then put the battery and then reconnect it. And then that's the only way my car could start.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I did a lot of bump starting.
Be a horrible wheel,
tons
man.
Tons of pushing the truck and jumping it in. I remember very clearly. The first Mazda pickup truck that I bought, which had a stick shift knob that was made out of an eight ball from a billiards parlor, which that was cool.
Charming badass.
The bench seat had been removed and bar stool seats were put in. And I had to bump start that car all the time. I drove that car. You'd have to park it on a hill, bump it. I pushed that car farther than I drove it. And it drove me nuts. And I had to bump it and bump it. And I always said, oh, this thing's fucked up or whatever. I don't have any money to fix it. And I just bump it. Because when I'd turn the key, it'd go like, rong, rong. And then I'd push it and I'd bump it. And at a certain point, I sold it to my friend Umgad Abu Zamzam.
Excuse me?
He needed a truck. And Egyptian. And he was a great mechanic. Oh. And I pushed this car around for a year and a half, and then I sold it to him. And then at some point, he said, I just changed the timing on it, and it runs like a top knot, starts every time. Meaning, he loosened up a Phillips head screw on the distributor, turned it a quarter turn, like advanced it or retarded it like a quarter turn, tighten the screw back down, and then the car started the whole time. I could have done that the whole goddamn time. Sorry, Brian.
That's all right. G. Rydell had a 1978 Saab 99.
Oh.
Definitely never heard of that.
That is offensive.
Yeah, that looks like a old, like, World War II
vehicle. It does
look
military.
Yeah.
Jimmy had a Saab.
Later.
Yeah. And you bring up military. Saab makes tons of fighter jets.
Oh, no shit.
Well, we see it.
Story checks out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You want me to move on?
Yeah.
Well, hold on. The VW Beetles did use pressure from the spare tire for the windshield wiper spray. Oh, this is a square back, but it's the same thing. VW used the air in the spare.
So what do you do when you need the spare?
You gotta fill it up with something blue.
Jesus.
I don't know.
Who is this? E. James 342. Oh, another car I never heard of. 1973 Mercury Montego.
Oh, yeah.
That
the Montego.
Damn! Look at that. That's something special.
You can lean into that.
Yeah, that's pretty badass.
I was telling this young hipster gal who drives the truck when I do the Fox hits. It's the same chick. We end up hanging around and talking and waiting around, and we start having conversations about cars. She wants a car. And she was looking into a Saab, and I just said, there's no good reason to get a Saab other than you'll be the only person driving a Saab. Mm-hmm. There is no, it's not better. It's not more efficient. It's not cheaper. It's not faster. It's not safer. It's not anything. It's just it's a weirdo car. But some people use their car mm-hmm. as a sort of expression of, hey, look at me. I'm hip. I'm
it's
driving.
It's an extension of the personality.
Yeah. You can't be an artist and pull up in a Civic. It just doesn't feel right. You have to have something that's weird or Euro or different.
Does anyone even work on Saabs?
I was going to say, difficult to service.
Yeah. Jimmy's Saab, which he had at a later station in life, because I lived in a house. I mean, I bought a house at this point. So this was in the mid-later 90s. And he pulled up in his Saab in his car. This is an example of why Saab's a weirdo car. In his 1996 Saab, the ignition was between the two seats on the transmission tunnel where the old emergency brake used to be. So you'd have to put it in between the seats and turn it, which would always mean that when you were putting the key in and fumbling around, you would inevitably drop the keychain and it would slide down in between the seats, and then you had to get out of the car. But that's Saab.
That's good engineering.
Saab's like, we could put it on the dash where every other car company has been doing it forever. Famously, Porsche does it on the left side of the steering column, which they still do to this day. Their argument was during the Le Mans start when they used to run across the track that when you open the driver's side door, it's more easily accessible.
Okay.
But and then they just did it. They just leave it that way because they're Porsche. But that's Saab, key in the middle.
Boy, am I glad you brought that up, because our final entry from 1970, AZ Rogart had a 1970 Pontiac Le Mans.
Wow.
Did you know that Pontiac made a Le Mans?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Green on green crime.
Yeah, Pontiac Le Mans. Yeah, 1970, did Army
anyone,
green.
Did anyone ever, has anyone who competed in Le Mans ever driven a Pontiac Le Mans?
No, never happened. We got Jimmy and his Isuzu iMarks that his dad bought.
Late night.
Yeah.
Wow.
He had a vanity plate that said L8NITE.
Committed.
Yeah, NITE.
Fortuitous.
Yeah. Crazy. He was just destined to have a late night show. Yeah, the story that always cracks me up about his dad and the Isuzu iMark, which is Isuzu, it's sort of like you had Ford, you had Chevy, GM, then you had Nissan and Toyota and Honda. Then you'd kind of get a little fringy with your Subarus and your Saabs and stuff. But when you got to Isuzu, you were just way the fuck off any beaten path of reliable automobile. That's just a weirdo Japanese car. I had the Isuzu Trooper, famously. But his dad went out to buy an Isuzu iMark and came home with two.
Wow.
Why won't get a BOGO sale?
I have no idea. He sold him two. Whoever sold him that, I would hire immediately.
Exactly.
He took the world's shittiest car from 1984.
Turned out two on the same day.
Sold the same guy two
of
the same car. So he got back. Jim Kimmel, Jimmy's dad, came back and had two Isuzu iMarks and gave one to Jimmy, which I don't think
he
wanted. But that was Jimmy and his Isuzu iMark.
So thank you all for your submissions. It made my morning.
All right. Well,
you heard of every one of those for the most part.
Yeah, no, I've heard of every one of them. I've heard of every one of them. I was there. I remember I used to
see
him.
It was your era.
I don't remember the Montego.
I also just kind of marveled on like who. I was always curious, like, why would you do that? Why would you why would you buy that car? I remember when I was 13, my buddy Chris's mom came home in a brand new Mustang 2 back when, you know, you can kind of.
Is that those weird, like, late 80s Mustangs?
Early 90s? Late 70s, early. It was the Charlie's Angels Mustang, but a total piece of shit. And then his sister had an AMC Pacer. And I'm like, why would you do this? Why would you?
At the time, you knew.
Yeah. And then she's the mom who looked at me once and said, what's wrong with your hair? And I went, I don't know. I'm trying to make it look feathered or whatever, but it won't move. And she went, do you have a vitamin deficiency?
Wow.
Like you're anemic? Like,
yeah, you're anemic. You have yellow eyes, you're jaundiced.
All right. Well, since we've been talking about cars, why don't I tell you about Hyundai? Throughout history, electricity has inspired some pretty incredible inventions, like smartphones and those little robot vacuums people name like pets. But of all the great things, nothing compares to the Hyundai Ioniq 5. 100% electric AR heads-up display, pixel-inspired light clusters. Introducing the first ever Hyundai Ioniq 5. Your journey at its most evolved. Right, Dawson?
Extremely limited availability. Available in select states only. Contact your Hyundai dealer for availability details.
All right. Now, so let's see. Let me check my run through here. Tank Sinatra, who does all the memes, has been screwed up at the airport. He's on the move. He's how far out now? He's panicking that he's not going to get here.
He's not going to get here. He's about 20 minutes out still, 25 minutes out.
So it's a flight delay mixed with a shuttle issue and LAX clusterfuck. So he's hustling. So what we're going to do is we're going to do news in the next segment, and then we'll bring Tank and Dan and Rick in and do all that after this. Would you love to save some money on your insurance? Of course you would. And who doesn't love a deal? When it comes to great rates on insurance for everything, GEICO can help. Insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, RV, even your homeowners, condo, or renter's insurance, they are all covered with GEICO. Save even more with special discounts when you bundle coverages together. Plus, they have an easy-to-use GEICO mobile app and 24/7 roadside assistance, so it's easy to switch to GEICO. It's a no-brainer. Switch today and see just how much you could save at geico.com. Go there and get a rate quote or contact a local agent.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Big news with Gina. Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
I have a new theory.
Yeah.
I was doing a hit yesterday on Fox, and they were talking about road diets and trying to get everyone on bicycles. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I was kind of thinking about Dan and Rick coming in here with Baby Blues Barbecue and stuff. And I sort of had this analogy, but it'll lead to my new theory, which is we have these road diets out here. It's like, instead of two lanes, we'll go to one lane and we'll dedicate the other lane to cyclists, right, who never seem to appear. And it's sort of like, it's like you saying, I want people to eat less meat, so we should shut down half of the barbecue places. Mm-hmm. And all that does is create a huge line at the ones you, right, left over. That's what the road diets do. They don't get anyone under a bicycle. They just piss off the people that are commuting in the car. But I thought about the fact that I passed 1 million homeless encampments, and there are always tons of bicycles. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, oh, they just steal those bicycles. Mm. And then I used to see guys who did that move where they were riding one bike and they had the other bike that they were kind of steering along next to them. Oh, I see it now. I see a lot of it now. Yeah. And I'm like, so my old theory was, when you see a guy riding a bike and he's got that bike that he's steering next to him, he stole that bike. And then I realized, he stole both bikes. That dude.
He pulled a Jim Kimmel.
That dude stole both bikes. Yeah, see, he didn't go, right, in and pay retail for his bike, right, and then go walk that other bike around. No, that's two bikes there.
That's an unfortunate point.
Thank you. Sorry, news.
Well, remember we were talking about, you know, oh, Elon doesn't like the looks of this, you know, the way they've sort of down-rounded the bots on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And you said, like, you know, why should he trust Twitter? He needs to do a little fact checking. Well, he thinks he's done that, and he feels even more unlikely that he's going to buy Twitter. What? Although I'm not sure that that's that he can pull out, but he is Elon. He can do whatever the fuck he wants. So he keeps pointing to this claim that less than 5% of accounts are fake, but Musk believes the number to be around 20% of the accounts. And he said, "Oh, here we're looking at right now." He says 20% fake spam accounts, while four times what Twitter claims, could be much higher. The offer was based on Twitter's SEC filings being accurate. Yesterday, Twitter's CEO publicly refused to show proof of less than 5%. This deal cannot move forward until he does. Meanwhile, Twitter is moving forward with the sale, whatever that means. The company's filed the necessary paperwork with Security and Exchange Commission and will call for a shareholder vote on the deal. They want that cash.
Like when the Major League umpires, I remember their big, brilliant negotiation in the 90s was to offer their resignations like in mass, and baseball is like, fine, fuck off. And they're like, well, no, what do you mean? It's like, yeah, I have a letter in my hand.
But he's right. I mean, I'm being sold. It's like a house evaluation. Like, I'm being sold this because you said that the pipes weren't busted. Like, so why should I buy it for this price?
Well, what Elon is probably doing is, look, what he's saying probably is, like, based on having 200 million subscribers, you should have this much ad revenue. Like, you should be generating this much. Mm-hmm. If your number is this, you should be generating that. So I don't see you generating that.
Right.
And could be other factors at work. But I think that's what he's basing it on. Now, if Twitter has documents that suggest it's under 5%, I'm sure they would produce that.
Sure.
Also, I don't think what they want to get into is some sort of legal battle, because then you get into discovery. And then once you get into discovery, then you need to open the books, right, Twitter, and then it becomes sort of public record. So who knows? And I, you know, now you kind of go, did he ever want to buy this? I have no idea.
I think it was Jody Miller who was here. I don't think it was you, Gina. Mm. But we initially were both like, he wants out. This was not a thing he wanted to do. It's going to fall through, and got a lot of blowback. And fuck off, everyone.
Well, look, if Twitter still wants a sale, they can satisfy him. I mean, it's look, if it totally makes sense to me that Twitter is going to drive that number as low as they possibly can.
Of course.
So if they say 5%, you could logically think 10% or 15% or 20%. So obviously the number is going to be lower than whatever they provide. Higher than whatever Twitter provides. Then what Elon, you know, it's like you said, when you buy a house, you know, you buy a house and they go, oh, well, the chimney's going to need a little repair. And then me as the house owner, I go, that's going to cost, I don't know, $2,500. And then you go, no, it's going to cost $28,000. Yeah. And you're trying to drive it up. Right. I'm trying to drive it down. And then the only way to really do it is you go, we got to get a certified guy in here. He's got to inspect the flue and he's got to drop thing.
Yeah, as pertains to Twitter, there's a lot of wiggle room with fake, right? Are we talking Russian troll farms? Or are we talking like AI just meant to like, you know, retweet whoever for whatever interest?
Or a person with more than one account.
Exactly.
I still don't know what a bot is, honestly.
You can create a bot. So there's hundreds, I'm sure thousands of bots, but there was a bot who would tweet about when the vaccines were available. You know, Pomona, CVS has five vaccines.
That's a bot.
Yeah, it's just something that tweets automatically based on some sort of input.
All right. Well, we shall keep you posted.
Yes. So the big day is here as we record this. Hopefully there'll be even more info tomorrow or the next day. The Pentagon showcased declassified photos and video of UFOs today to Congress. Fox News reports that in one brief and shaky video, a small object appeared to zip past a military pilot. In a separate video, there seems to be like a glowing triangle in the sky. Authorities all said that
Predator.
There have been at least 11, quote, near
Taking
misses between U.S. military aircraft and UAP. We don't call them UFOs anymore.
No.
UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena. Lawmakers are warning that although there is still a stigma associated with UFOs, UAP, they're a serious national security threat. And Fox goes on to say that a 2021 report said that the government recorded 144 reports from 2004 to 2021, including 80 that involved observation with multiple sensors.
You know what would be more helpful? Because I see these guys, the experts, the UAP guys or the UFO guys, they pop up on shows once in a while, and they're experts on this, and they explain, you know, the dynamics of it and the math of it and why, whatever. The guy's always 80 pounds overweight with the weird buzz cut side haircut or something. If they could get essentially what would help them is if they just hired some guy who looked like Sean Hayes. And he would just sit there. We put him in like a buttoned up shirt with a nice collar, you know, and he would just say, and it say the same thing the other guy said, because these guys always sound like nut jobs, but it's not, they know all the information. You're just kind of looking at them and the weird facial hair, the jowls, the extra weight. You always go like, I don't trust that guy. Like, I look, everything he says sounds sober and accurate to me. But look at that guy.
Yeah.
But if you get like a Sean Hayes
type, I like it.
I'm trying to think of another very sober looking actor.
Jason Bateman
could
Paul
get up
Rudd,
there.
Paul Rudd, there's a role of lifetime.
All right. And they just get up there and just say the same thing. Yeah. But it's just the package,
more
the
gravitas.
Way it's presented.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. So hopefully people will start giving a shit about this, like you said, like we thought everyone was going to. We'll keep you posted. I don't even know if we spent any time on this. You might have while I was gone. But, you know, Britney Spears was so excited. She had her baby announcement and it was a big deal. Well, she's now announced that she has had a miscarriage. The singer broke the news on Instagram saying, "It's with our deepest sadness that we have to announce we lost our miracle baby early in the pregnancy. This is a devastating time for any parent. Perhaps we should have waited to announce until further along. However, we were overly excited to share the good news." She's still very much with her fiance, Sam Asghari. And I didn't pull any of these. Ben, perhaps you could just pull up her page. To each their own. I don't know. I've never been through this. I don't know what it's like. I certainly don't know Britney personally. But the posts following this, right back to Crazy Town, huh? With the modeling and the dancing.
She's doing a lot of naked photos.
Yeah, right back to I mean, speaking of sobering, it's not like the tone has shifted. I have heard from I noticed on a certain gossip columnist page mm-hmm. that there's thoughts that she was never really pregnant. This is part of a little bit of a psychosis, maybe.
Interesting.
Yeah, but it's,
everything from her seems sort of dubious now.
Yeah. Now, Sean Hayes reported it.
Yeah.
I would believe anything that fucking guy said. And last but not least, Sean Hayes, like after his UFO, he'd be like, and this breaking news, Adam Carolla is in fact gay. I'd be like, oh, fuck, I got to get maybe gotta find it, dude.
Okay, I mean, I don't feel like it, but Sean Hayes said it.
She seems wackadoodle.
Yeah.
She's doing a lot of nude photos, which I keep seeing on TMZ. And
are those penises?
There's some sort of weird
lipstick maybe
thing where there's some thing. Algorithm where if you made a chart about like women, it used to be women notables who posed in Playboy.
Mm-hmm.
It'd always be if you made a chart of the height of America wanting to see them nude, and when they finally decided to pose for Playboy, they're off by like 26 years every time. It's usually the chart's going down at that point.
Right.
I think Britney's kind of that way. Like,
I get it.
I would have been all eyes somewhere around 2002. You know,
but sure.
Now this just seems like
now she's giving it away.
A
and you're not
thirsty
really
middle-aged gal trying to give it away.
Well, I am so glad you brought up that analogy because we have a very very special series of Sports Illustrated swimsuit covers.
Oh, boy.
And, you got your Kim Kardashian, who, I don't know, has she not been on it? I didn't realize that. Singer Ciara, this girl Yumi Nu, who's a model and, I guess, Asian curve model and singer-songwriter. But do you know who the older gal is?
Yes, because I watch TMZ.
That's right. That is Mae Musk, Musk's mother.
Mm-hmm.
A very handsome older woman.
She's proud, and she was a former model.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how this worked, but there she was. And look, this is a corruption of an institute.
Crawford, Elle McPherson.
A lot of the swimsuit model, Sports Illustrated is discovering whoever it is.
Right.
Seeing Kim Kardashian and something skimpy is
yawn.
Right. It's there. We've seen it.
Yeah.
Why? Why do we need her? Elon's mom looks good for a 79-year-old, mm-hmm. but that's not also plus size models. Look, if that's your thing, fine. But again, it's what we love most about sports, the meritocracy. Not Sports Illustrated, just sports.
Sports, comma, Illustrated.
Yes. The
Yumi
Nu is a big gal who doesn't look great in a bikini, but we're forced to not say anything about it. And also, the I agree that when we were. My sister used to be a little heavy when she was nine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I called her Porky Balorky and Fatsy Balatsy.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Now, look, I'm not proud of that.
You shouldn't be.
I stand by it.
Cruel.
But I'm not proud of it. So I agree that's not the way to go with the plus size ladies.
Right.
But I don't know if we should be celebrating them. See, now we're celebrating them. And, they have these charts for it's not morbidly obese. It's like for every 5 pounds you're overweight, you live 2 years less or something. It's something insane. It turns out being ultra skinny is like the healthiest in terms of like longevity and whatever. I know.
Oh, you know what? It's funny you should say that. Let me, Brian, shit all over your point. I heard on this podcast called Maintenance Phase about diet and stuff that they say that older people who have a little extra weight actually live longer because one of the reasons was, when you take a spill and you break your hip and that's pretty much the end, there's extra fat and there's extra padding keeping you from breaking your hip.
They're like bumbles. Yeah. So I don't know who's into the plus sizer, but I'd like to just get back to the meritocracy world where you just found the hottest chicks that fit in a bikini and put them up for our consumption.
Well, you know, you use the word celebration, like we're celebrating this. There's a different word that I think actually makes the point better because it's the point, it's the word that you hear more in terms of this, representation. So you think if yes. half the if yes. more than half the population looks like this, she's one of our gals, or you know, it's
yes. But I argue that the reason we have models are the same reason we have professional sports and the same reason we have action movies. We go there to not be represented. You know what I mean? Like
fantasy.
Yes, I want to see people who do things that I can't do because this isn't. You don't need representation in the fantasy. You don't need representation at the cinema. You don't need representation in Sports Illustrated. You don't. Models aren't supposed to be. The whole thing that makes you a model is you go, God, look how long that bitch's neck is. That's crazy. Like you see, once in a while you see a woman and she's got like a 9-inch neck and you go, look at her jawline. Yeah. Oh my God. Doesn't represent anything. That's what they do.
You're right.
The dog show doesn't represent our dogs. It's them.
Well, that's put. Yeah, that's very well put.
The crazy thing about the model we were talking about, if you just, you know, take your thumb and blot out the body or, you know, whatever with your hand, she has a skinny contoured model.
You know my theory.
Isolate the face.
The jawline.
I want a bucket-headed bitch up there. You always do the plus size. The plus size, it's only the body. It's not the cabeza. There are plenty of people with the big cabeza. They'll never put them up. All the plus size models have the big ass, the big belly, and the titties and everything. But the head is still the face of a model. Give me a plus. Give me a triple chinner up there.
And she's, I mean, just for extra clarification, I think she's Dutch and Japanese. I mean, she's strikingly beautiful. But you're talking about the face.
Indeed.
So, okay. Well, let's talk about those fantasy movies for a hot sec, because Vin Diesel says the Fast and Furious movies continue to be a miracle. And I think that's probably a good way to describe it. This is following the departure of the longtime franchise director, Justin Lin. And you might have some inside scoop on this, Adam. I'm not sure.
I do.
Oh, good. Well, Lin reportedly left abruptly, citing creative differences with Diesel, which included, in the rumor mill anyway, Vin's very unprofessional behavior on and off set. Yeah, continuing production just wasn't worth it to Lin's mental health. But Cinema Blend reports that production back on track after hiring director Louis Leterrier. Does that mean anything to you, Brian?
Yeah.
He's Transporter Films, okay, Now You See Me, Incredible Hulk.
That's right.
Now Red here's Norton Hulk. Yeah. Yes, right. Here's a social media post that Vin did, and he does a lot of these. Like he'll grab anyone who's coming out of their trailer and be like, "So, are we excited?" Right. So this is one he did with Justin Lin, like literally days before Lin quit. It's the visual is extra helpful, but this is Vin hyping up the movie and Justin just trying his best.
What do you think, Justin?
Week one. Just finished week one.
How does it feel?
Feels like the beginning of an epic ending.
Is it fair to say that this will be the best one?
In my heart, yes.
Shrugging and head nodding.
Oh, that should not have been published.
Yeah.
That was a hostage video.
Spill it, Adam.
Well,
my captors would treat me very well.
That's exactly right.
I had one of my marathon dinners with Chris Morgan, who invented the whole series, and now he's on to Hobbs and Shaw and Bird Box. And
more Bird Box?
He did Bird Box. There could be some more Bird Box.
Bird Boxes.
Not sure, but, you know, rest assured that anything that is wildly successful, whatever it is, there's going to be some version of that coming down the pike at some point. He prefaces everything, single thing he says to me, this just can't leave the table.
Oh, shit.
So
come on.
I try to adhere to it, but put it to you.
Instead of Fast and Furious, say Harry Potter.
On this, I will say, on the set of Harry Potter,
yeah,
Dumbledore.
Most of his job was appeasing a lot of big names who were having trouble with things in the script about, I would never lose to this guy in a fist fight, and I'll go back and write something else. And
that's been reported.
It does become very taxing. Because you can't just write a script and go do the script.
Well,
you have
there was
sort of and the guys, he was so good at it. That's why all his Fast and Furious stuff was so successful. He just wrote the next Shazam movie.
Oh shit!
So said
the first one was good.
Shazam: The Story of Gomer Pyle.
Fuck.
Yeah, the Jim Neighbor story.
You're kidding.
Yeah, that was his. That was his. That, by the way, his Shazam was long before or Sid on it or anything. Gomer Pyle. Jim Neighbors had his, you know, it was, it, you know, like, what you talking about, Willis?
Yeah, sure.
He had Shazam. He had this super gay Shazam.
I'm vaguely aware of
from
all
the
this
from the 60s.
Huh.
Yeah. Jim Not Neighbors was, you'll find Jim Neighbors saying Shazam. Anyway, he said he was, some people are just better at the Henry Kissinger role, you know, it's a constant going in between, talking to. That's what it took. You had to be some sort of like goodwill ambassador slash writer, director. You know, it wasn't enough just to write and direct. You had to go in between the camps and keep everyone happy.
Well, there was also rumors that kind of like you hinted at about Harry Potter, there was a lot of changing the dialogue, while you're filming, I feel like saying this today. These are the words I fancy, and just really exhausting everyone.
We have, we have Gomer Pyle saying Shazam breaking. From 1964 or something.
Terrific.
Yeah.
I went to see a gypsy woman late last night. Told her everything I do, it never works out right. I gave her all my money, nearly 40 left.
Is it Jim Neighbor singing?
She said you need a magic word to give you confidence. Just say Shazam, sit zap, man, you gotta put a whammy on. You can move the world.
Part of a song.
So,
Jesus Christ.
This was a song he recorded, and then
I would think that's like Kim cashing in on his catchphrase.
Well, now,
oh boy,
Dawson, you're gonna have fun, but have him. You can find footage of Jim Neighbors at the Indy 500 singing America the Beautiful or whatever. It's a slightly different tone.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
More respectful, reverent.
So that song came out when? Shazam.
Not sure. I'm trying to find a compilation clip of him saying it in the show, though.
Oh, okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, this is from an article in GQ in January from, I guess, Dwayne Johnson had some thoughts about filming. And I think this was on Instagram, but here's something he said. There's no other franchise that gets my blood boiling more than this one. My female co-stars are always amazing, and I love them. My male co-stars, however, are a different story. Some conduct themselves as stand-up men and true professionals, while others don't. The ones that don't are too chicken shit to do anything about it anyway. Candy asses.
This is from when?
This is from January.
Because before that, he was always very magnanimous and hey, you know, just didn't see eye to eye, and now he's kind of cutting loose. Good for him. The guy's a big star, and he should have to put up with that shit.
Well, the reality is you're in this franchise, you're set for life, your work consists of going to exotic locales and having makeup applied.
Being in cool cars.
You only need to work 4 months every 26 months or something, you know. This is it's a glimpse behind the curtain of human nature.
Yeah.
You can go from auditioning for the part, please,
I'll do anything.
To we're doing episode 4, this is good. To now it's the 10th installment. Fuck this shit. That guy got paid $10 more than me. I mean, it's just a little glimpse into how humans work and how they seem to go that direction.
Yeah.
And some people just have a nature like a dog has a nature. They're just friendly. They're just easy to get along with. They're professional. They're whatever. And they'll just sail right through every one of these endeavors.
Yeah.
And then they're the troublemakers. And the only problem with the troublemakers is they never know they're the troublemakers.
Yes.
They always have a beef with everybody all the time.
Yeah, 100%. I guarantee Vin Diesel thought that was a tremendous hype video.
Yeah.
He's so incredibly uncharismatic, he doesn't realize it.
Yeah.
So anyway.
When you said that about, the people that are just like that, oh, good. Is this a supercut of Shazam?
This is him saying three catchphrases: Garsh, Shazam, and Golly.
Oh, Golly was his too, yeah.
Gosh,
I wish I was in. I understand in the writer's room, what all you have to do is come up with a couple of catchphrases. You know what I mean? You
sure.
I don't have a joke here. Well, just have him say the Shazam there. Just
get a big laugh.
We'll put a Shazam in there. And then we don't have anything for this page three, but we'll do a Golly.
What about the B story there in Act Two? It kind of drops out a little bit.
Garsh.
Oh, Shazam, Phil. Oh, okay. I have an idea. We'll put fucking Shazam in there. Now go get me some coffee.
Was he
the head writer.
Get the goddamn coffee. Wish I had some coffee. Sorry.
Was he supposed to be like developmentally delayed?
I think it was.
IDD.
Was it like Forrest Gump-esque?
I don't know.
He was a tall guy.
The whole thing was Jim Nabors being yelled at by his drill sergeant the whole time. Pile, Shazam! You know, and he was always the inspection was coming, and he gussied up the barracks by putting flowers in. It was like, Pile, what are you doing? Shazam-ali! You know, it was like, that's all it was his CO would come into the barracks and start yelling at him for fucking something up.
This is a very ignorant question, but is there any connection between that character and Goofy the dog? Like, did one beget the other?
Like Gersh.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the Golly and the Gersh.
I don't know, but if you get him singing America the Beautiful or whatever it is at the... Or maybe it was the Star Spangled Banner.
If we promise to be really good, do we not have to hear it?
I'm just saying, in contrast to his Shazam song, that's what we need.
Tune to the circuit breakers on the wall. Turn it off.
Well, since we're talking about movies, we haven't talked about this, and I don't know. Maybe Brian might have a thought about this. I'm not sure. Kevin Spacey's back, baby.
Good.
Kinda. He's going to start an upcoming historical drama. This is his... the disgraced actor's biggest gig since being accused of sexual harassment back in 2017. He's going to co-star with Eric Roberts and Terrence Stamp in a movie called 1242 Gateway to the West. It's about Genghis Khan's grandson.
Wow. Oh, no, this is appropriation. Yeah. I don't like this at all.
Principal photography is set to begin in October in Hungary and Mongolia.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I want to hear a little Shazam, and then we'll do the indie national anthem.
This all came from the superhero movie.
So first we'll do Shazam, probably 1967 or something. Or whatever you just played. That song.
Gosh.
The song, though.
She said you need a magic word to give you confidence. Just say
so this is the theme song from his spin-off show.
I knew it.
Oh.
Cash in.
You're right.
Phenomenal.
No one's ever heard that special secret word, so if you want your way, just remember what to say.
Shazam. Oh, the background singers.
Yeah. Shazam.
I went to see a banker with a white shirt on.
The lovely lady.
All right. Here's the exact same human being at the Indy 500.
Oh, say can you see?
Is this true?
Yes.
By the dawn's early light.
There's footage of it.
Baritone.
So proudly we hail.
From deep.
At the twilight's last gleaming. Whose broad stripes and white stars. Through the perilous fight. For the right. But we watch with so gallantly streaming and the rocket's red flame.
Damn.
All right.
That's not easy.
You're not going to. No, there's no. No one has that much range.
That's impressive.
Circa late 80s, judging by the graphics.
Yeah, well, this isn't the Indy 500, by the way. This is
94. Oh, whatever that was.
Mm-hmm.
That what we're looking at was the Daytona 500, probably. Mm. Wow. Is that Indy?
The Brickyard 400. I thought Brick. Yeah.
But see, those were NASCARs.
Yeah, I didn't finish typing.
They weren't
500.
Open wheel.
I typed Indy and then I pressed backspace four times. It was gone.
They're called Indy cars.
You caught it.
All right. Anyway, it's him singing. He did it at Indy. He did it every year.
So are you hypothesizing that he was playing a character when he was like Shazam?
I think. Well, one of them is the real Jim Nabors.
We'll never know.
We'll never know.
Okay. All right. Let me tell you about BetterHelp. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Many people, they're burned out and they don't even know it. It's not just work. It's our roles in life. It can burn us out. People are suffering out there. God, look at the statistics. Ooh, you got to get your head right. BetterHelp wants to remind you to prioritize yourself. Talk with someone to figure out what's causing the stress in your life. BetterHelp, customized online therapy, offering video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. More affordable than in-person therapy, and you can get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Take care of yourself with BetterHelp, right, Dawson?
Adam Carolla Show listeners get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/Carolla. That's BetterHelp.com/CAROLLA.
Well, Dan Dunn's going to come in with Rick McCarthy of Baby Blues Barbecue, and we're going to taste some drinks with Dan and some barbecue, and we'll give you all the recommendations right after this.
All this month, stream the funniest films for free on Pluto TV. Watch comedy classics like Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy, and Mean Girls. Or drop in for a Tyler Perry marathon with a Madea family funeral and Madea's witness protection. Pluto TV also has hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and TV shows like Get Shorty, Be Cool, Key and Peele, Comedy in Color, and more. And no contracts, no subscriptions, no fees, no joke. So download the Pluto TV app on your favorite streaming device and start laughing today. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free.